a few left on the back table, and open up our Bibles to the book of Exodus, chapters 33 and 34. This is where we are going to hang our hat this morning as we digest another mountaintop experience. We have been on these mountaintops for the past few weeks in the Bible. If you will recall, remember the story of Elijah on Mount Carmel and what God did through that prophet. He was a man just like we are, the book of James tells us. And he went down into the valley of depression right after he had a mountaintop experience. And then we also learned that God was not finished with Elijah. He sent him over into Damascus where he anointed his successor, Elisha. And then we talked about Noah, and learned that Noah was a man who walked with God, and he experienced the grace of God. And then we talked about the Mount of Transfiguration. And we learned the meaning there of that word Shekinah glory and how it originated in the scriptures. And now today we are going to climb another mountain that I'm sure all of us have climbed more times than we care to admit. The mountain of unfulfilled dreams. Now last Sunday before church, Pete and I were in the kitchen talking, and he used the phrase bucket list. And that phrase bucket list stuck with me. And so I kind of developed my introductory comments around that phrase bucket list. Most of us have bucket lists. They may not consciously be written down, but subconsciously they have anchored in our heart, bucket lists. You know what they are, things I would like to do but haven't done it yet, places I would like to go but haven't gotten there yet, experiences that I would love to have shared in my heart, they haven't arrived yet. And we have all these things that we dream about, that we plan to do, or trips we want to take, places we want to see. They're called bucket lists. How many of you have a bucket list? Some of you, I don't think, are awake yet this morning. We all have bucket lists. But you know, Hunsinger has been with us since the inception of our church 32 years ago. And I learned some things about this man of God when we traveled together. We went down to Shuler's Institute for Successful Church Leadership many years ago, and we had some downtime on a Saturday. So we meandered around Southern California, and we stumbled across a flea market. How many of you know what a flea market is? There are now, all of you are awake now. And so we went into this huge flea market, and I kind of lost track of Dennis. We kind of went our separate ways based upon our interests. And so I had seen enough, and I said, where in the world is Hunsinger? And so I meandered around that huge flea market, and there he was parked in front of this vast amount of baseball cards. And it was there that I learned that he was an authority on the value of baseball cards. So if you have any baseball cards laying around, he might know how much they are worth. Any event, years ago, it's been a long time since I've been at an auction, but in days past, I loved to go to auctions. So I showed up there at Ken's auction, which is no more, by the way. But we went into Ken's auction, and I got turned on by things which I thought I needed but didn't have. And there was Hunsinger. Hunsinger was there. And so it became habitual for us to inform one another when Ken's auctions would pop up and we would go. And that is no longer there. But Ken, the owner of the auction, he labeled Hunsinger as the mayor of Rainier. And Hunsinger would put up his hand and Ken would say, and he would outbid other people. And finally, Ken would say, "Sold to the mayor of Rainier, Hunsinger." Those were fun days. And I'm still getting rid of stuff that I collected that I need to downsize, but in any event, auctions are a lot of fun. Well, in 1926, the most unusual auction took place in Washington, D.C. The Patent Office, the U.S. Patent Office, took over 150,000 patents, workable models of things people had invented, and they were auctioning them off. Now, in those days, if you're going to get a patent, you have to have an example or an illustration of that which you want to patent, and they accumulated so many of them they had to sell out, 150,000 of them. It was quite an auction. A lot of people came. 150,000 different, workable, by the way, things to bid on. For example, they had a cat there that would be illuminated and it would blink on and off and it would drive all the rats away. Why that didn't sell is beyond me, but it didn't. They had an automatic bed bug pincher. And listen to this, they had an apparatus there you could put on your head with a little microphone type thing. Listen to this. And then when you would snore, you would wake yourself up. Why that didn't sell is beyond me, but it didn't work. And then they had this adjustable pulpit that was there. In those days, the pastor would actually stand stationary behind a pulpit like I stand today when I give my messages. Now some pastors, they walk all over the place. And you're going to get dizzy following them around, but that's not my style. My style is to stay put. Well, in those days, they had this pulpit that they would be auctioning off, and the auctioneer said, once a pastor was speaking behind this pulpit. Now, this pulpit was a very unique pulpit. It had a push button on it. You could either be raised up for short people, or you could lower it for tall people. And so the bidding began on this pulpit that could be adjusted according to your height. And the auctioneer said one day, a pastor was actually speaking, standing behind this pulpit, and he asked the question, "Where will you spend eternity?" And he hit the wrong button and down he went. That's kind of funny. A lot of laughs and a lot of humor. People came to that auction to bid on things. But one man was there and he looked at all those different items on display and he thought, hey, I can write a book on this. And so he wrote a book, the book entitled Shattered Dreams of a Century. Shattered Dreams of a Century. Because he saw behind every little workable model somebody who had enough creativity and imagination and adventure to put something together. And that guy thought, well, this is going to fly and this is going to be marketed. A lot of people are going to buy this invention of mine, and that would be on the road to me becoming a millionaire. Well, it didn't happen. Shattered dreams of a century. How many of us have experienced over a lifetime broken dreams, unfulfilled dreams, a bucket list of things we want to do, places we want to see, unfulfilled dreams, expectations were not met. And when I thought about the bucket list, and Pete was the one that put me on to this, when I thought about bucket lists, are there any biblical characters in the Bible who had a bucket list? And one man came to my mind. That man's name was Moses. Moses had a bucket list. As a matter of fact, if you were to name the three most important people in the Bible, excluding the Son of God, of course, if you could name the three most important people in the Bible, it probably would be Abraham, Moses, and Paul. Now, that can be debated, of course. So it was Moses who had the dream. And God prepared him and built into his character and his heart and his mind and his soul. God was saying, Moses, there's a purpose for your life that I want to see fulfilled in your life. And my purpose is, Moses, listen up, you are to take all of those Jews out of slavery that's been there in Egypt for around 400 years, and I want you, Moses, to bring them into the promised land. That God has written up a deed for these Israelites, and this promised land is flowing with milk and honey. That was Moses' life purpose. And I've called Moses a 40-40-40 guy. For those of you who have studied the Bible and studied the life of Moses, you know what that means. We have 40 years, his first 40 years. He was born in Egypt, and in those days, the male boy born was killed. They were thrown into the Nile. And Miriam, Moses' sister, took him, and she made a little ark, a little cradle, and she placed that little infant into that cradle and pushed him away into the Nile River. It just so happened that the day as he was floating downstream, Pharaoh's daughter was out there bathing, and she saw this cradle floating by with a little baby in it. And so she rescued this Jewish boy, took him out of the river, and she brought Moses up as her own son. And so, thrilling story. The first 40 years, Moses lived as a prince of Egypt. By the way, if you have not seen that movie, The Prince of Egypt, it's true to biblical accounts of what happened there, and it's in a cartoon format. It's really intriguing to watch and learn about the life of Moses. So the first 40 years of his life, he got the best education in the world at that time. He also was trained with military strategies so that he knew how to fight a war. He had a fabulous life. He was a somebody, a prince in Pharaoh's palace for 40 years. And in the second 40 years of his life, he was a nobody. He went from being a somebody to being a nobody. And you recall what happened. He watched his own people intermingle with the Egyptians, and he knew he had some Jewish lineage in him. And so one day, he watched an Egyptian exploiting a Hebrew, and then infuriated Moses. And the Bible tells us that he interceded in behalf of that Jewish person, and he killed the Egyptian. Took him out. He was angry when he did that, by the way. You know what he did with his body? He buried the body of that Egyptian in the sand. Thought he would get away with it. Buried him. But Young's translation says, that the wind happened to be blowing that day, and the dead Egyptian's toes stuck up out of the sand. And they caught him, and he became a fugitive. So he lived on the backside of the desert for 40 years. How many of us, present company included, have had those moments when we were down and out and we were on the backside of the desert, a nobody? So he left Egypt on the run, and he went out into Midian. And to get to Midian, by the way, this is really interesting. You've got to go through the Sinai. It adjoins the Sinai there, and that's on the backside of absolutely nowhere. Now he's lived another 40 years as a nobody. He's a shepherd, taking care of sheep, goats, an unknown amount of working people in that wilderness on the backside of the desert. 40 years a somebody, and 40 years a nobody. And then you know what happened if you read the story. Reading the story of Moses is a thrilling story, I tell you. You all know about the burning bush, right? God spoke to him through that burning bush. That got his attention. And God said, Moses, now I want you to go back to Egypt, and I want you to lead my people into freedom and into the promised land. You know what Moses did when God told him to do that? He began to make excuses. One of which was he said to God that he couldn't speak fluently because he had a stuttering tongue. Can you believe it? Stuttered all the time. Wow. Trying to work his way out of that assignment God had for him to do. Couldn't talk without stuttering. You're looking at a guy who had a big, major stuttering problem all the way through the fourth grade. Couldn't talk. My sister can validate that experience. She was my interpreter. I would point and yeah. And Sherry could understand what I would say, and she would be my interpreter. Well, in the fourth grade, my dad decided I needed some attention on this stuttering tongue. So he hooked me up with a speech therapist, and I spent the fourth grade lunch hour, fifth grade lunch hour, inside the classroom with a speech therapist. She was teaching me how to talk. And then I was admonished to take all the speech courses in my education, which I did. And so now, basically, I'm free of stuttering. Can you say amen to that? That's a big-time miracle, I tell you. Even to be on the radio as a DJ playing country music, that indeed was a big-time miracle. And being a pastor and speaking all of these sermons over 50 years, but it was God who used my dad to get me some help that I desperately needed. Well, this was Moses' problem. By the way, I'm still not much of a talker. Just ask my wife. I'm more of a listener than I am a talker. But in any event, let's move on. So this was Moses' problem. And God said, well, that's no excuse, Moses. You got a brother, Aaron. He'll take care of the big speeches for you. You're my man to go back and lead your people who are slaves in Egypt, lead them into the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. And you know the story. You know the story about the staff, the miracles, and he struck the sea, and the people went over on dry land into the wilderness journeys. He got the commandment there to go into the land. But the problem that these Israelites had was they lacked the faith to pursue that journey. They had the fact that God had given him that land, but they didn't have enough faith to follow through on that fact. So therefore, they never had that moment, that wonderful feeling of being in the will of God and fulfilling the purposes of God. They didn't get there. And so Moses, for 40 years, he leads over 1 million people in one of the toughest terrains you could ever imagine. There's just miles and miles and then miles of rocks and nothingness in that wilderness. You froze at night and you burned up during the day. The nights were extremely cold and the heat was extremely hot. And so God used Moses, a wonderful story. And so Moses had to wait until a whole generation had died. A generation who did not believe, who did not follow, they died off. Then a new generation rose up, and Moses is ready to lead them across Jordan to have and claim the promise of God. Now Moses encountered a Mount Nebo experience. God said to Moses, "Let's go on a hike, Moses." And God led him to the peak of Mount Nebo, where he could see a panoramic view of the promised land. God probably took him to the highest peak on that mountain. High up, he could look out over into the promised land, and he probably could see the Dead Sea right in front of him. He probably could see Jericho. On a clear day, he probably could see the Mediterranean Sea. And what a panoramic view of the promised land. And God was saying to Moses, "This is the land that I've called you to go in and take those 1 million people with you and possess the promised land." Wow, Moses worked his entire life to see this dream fulfilled. Here he got a glimpse of it. Wow, beautiful. And all the heartache and all the grumbling and everything that the Israelites were doing is worth it to get to enter this promised land. Wow, he couldn't wait. I don't think he could. Sometimes when you read these biblical stories, you have to use your imagination. Put yourself in the shoes of those that you're studying. Moses, see this beautiful land? This is called the Promised Land. This is what I have called you to do, to lead all these people into the Promised Land. Wow. But, P.S. Moses, you will never enter the Promised Land. Climbing up on Mount Nebo, you couldn't go in. Talk about a disappointment. Wow, unbelievable. God, you got to be kidding. You have prepared me to take these people into the Promised Land. Do I hear you say that I will myself not go in? But God, this is my life purpose. This is what I'm all about. Moses, you can't go in. Folks, I'm going to tell you something. Mount Nebo's are a universal experience for all of us. And it starts early. We have a dream. We have a desire. We have an expectation. And it just simply does not work out the way we thought it would work out. And we find ourselves on top of Mount Nebo, not fulfilling that dream that we had in our hearts. How did we lose that? What happened? I've had my share of Mount Nebo's over these years, and I know you have too. When I was 17, as I recall, I thought I had fallen in love. Met her in church, in a youth group. She was the pastor's daughter. Wow, I would drive her home, go out on dates, and we would park in front of her house, and we would smooch. and we would talk. And when her mom decided, time's up, you know what her mom did? She would flip the porch light on, off and on, off and on. That was a signal for her to come inside. So I thought it was love at first sight. I was a slow developer at 17. And it was wonderful. This is the girl that I have fallen in love with. I thought, I'll marry. She has everything I was looking for. It was so great for a few months. And then I remember the day. She said, Dale, I don't like you anymore. What? I don't like you anymore. I didn't debate the issue. I didn't make a scene. I just turned and walked off the porch of her house, got into my car, drove home. Are you interested in this or not? Any event, I went home and my mom saw that I was so depressed, so down. She said, Dill, what's the matter with you? And I said, Mom, I've just been dumped by my girlfriend. And my mom gave me the best pep talk I could ever have at that time. She stroked my hair as I sat by that oil furnace in that house, and she built my self-esteem back up again. She gave me the AAA treatment. And I tell you what, I got out of that chair after Mom resurrected my spirits, went out into the back porch, and I kind of skipped down the stairs into the driveway, and I said, no more of her. Done. History. And I had just jumped off of my Mount Nebo. She wasn't the one for me. And after that experience, I didn't date until I was 21. I just didn't care. I just wiped that girl right out of my hair. I'll just wipe that girl right out of my hair and send her on her way. That I did. At 21, I met this other girl in college, and we got pretty serious. She wanted to marry me. I said, hey, I like your friendship, but I am in no position to get married. I can't even take care of myself, let alone someone else. And so I jilted her. I guess it might have been a payback from when I was jilted, I don't know. But anyway, that was when I was 21, and for the next 4 years, I had no interest in dating. No interest in girls. I went on to other pursuits. Until I turned 25. And Marianne's sister was the secretary of the church at that time. She was concerned that both her sister and me were single at our age. And she thought we ought to get together. So I said, well, invite her to church. So Marianne came on a Sunday night. I was leading singing in those days on Sunday night. I stayed on the platform for that service, and I got a good look at Marianne. Man, she was a knockout. Still is, by the way. And so I worked up enough courage to ask her out for a date. We went to see the Globetrotters play, and her comment after that first date was to her sister, as I recall, you know, Dale's a nice guy, but he doesn't talk very much. Well, 6 months later, we were married. I've been married now for 53 years. But I could go on and on sharing my Mount Nebo's experiences with you. Expectations that were not met. Dreams unfulfilled. And so my bottom line is, what we thought, what we envisioned, never did really happen. I should be in that position now, at my age, with my career, didn't happen. I should have all my expectations and dreams fulfilled now. Hasn't happened. You find yourself on top of Mount Nebo, and it just isn't there happening for you. So what do? You jump off. The first response is shock, disillusionment, discouragement, and Moses had that experience. Moses, his whole life, his purpose was to take the children of Israel into the promised land. Didn't happen. Moses made an interesting discovery as he was leading these people into the promised land, even though he could not go in himself. Moses learned a very important lesson right here. This is worth writing down. Moses learned that it's easier to take people out of slavery than to get slavery out of people. It's easier to take people out of slavery than to get slavery out of people. You get that slave mentality. Someone who's been in prison and all of a sudden, here's the activity of the prison lifestyle there. Someone can get out of prison, but still there is that weight, that habit. I can take a man here and we could go to happy hour in a bar for 3 months. Maybe we drink, maybe we don't. Just being in that kind of an atmosphere in a bar scene. And then we come out after 3 months, and I'll be amazed how our thinking will change, our reaction to what's going on in our lives will change because we've been under the influence of that bar scene at the happy hour. You can take somebody out of slavery, but it's hard to get that slavery out of that person. One of the strongest addictions that confronts us, some of us, is the drug addiction and the alcohol addiction and the tobacco addiction. We can go through the 12 steps. We can get into a support group. We can connect with God. But the bottom line is, some people make it, some people recover, some people don't. That's just the way it is. So it's easier to take people out of slavery than to get slavery out of people. So that's Moses' navel. 40 years, another 40 years, and then, sorry, Moses, can't go in to the promised land. Moses' heart and spirit must have been crushed. Don't you think so? So, what prepared Moses to take the children of Israel into the promised land? What preparation did Moses have? Number one, Moses was a man of prayer. Exodus chapter 32, verses 12 and 13. Then Moses said to the Lord, "See, you say to me, bring up this people, but you yourself have not let me know whom you will send with me. Moreover, you have said," here's his prayer, "I have known you by name, and you have also found favor in my sight. Now therefore I pray to you, if I have found favor in your sight, let me know. Let me know your ways, that I may know you, so that I may find favor in your sight." What Moses is saying here in this prayer is, if you know, you want me to go in, tell me what I need to do, and I will obey you. I know I will obey you, Lord. Just tell me. And he asked the Lord that he might find favor in his sight. He's saying, "Lord, I want to obey you. Just tell me what I have to do. And tell me what I have to stop doing. And Lord, then I will know where I need to obey. I know you. And then I will do what you tell me to do. I'll stop what you're telling me to say stop." And Lord, Moses was saying, bottom line, "I'll be on your team. I'll find favor in your sight. Give me your uniform. I'll put it on. And God, I'm your man. I'll be your man." You see, God was preparing Moses for a long, long time before he gets there into the wilderness, doorsteps of the wilderness, on the threshold of entering the promised land with all these people. Million people he's trying to lead into the promised land. So Moses was a man of prayer. Secondly, Moses was called a servant leader. I think this is the first time that term servant leader is used in the Bible. Don't know for sure about that, but I think it is. What does it mean to be a servant of the Lord? That's a real good question. What does it mean to be a servant of the Lord? Here's a servant leader's motto: His will, not our right. His pleasure, not our position. His glory, and not what we decide. That's how the body of Christ functions and works. So this is what Moses had in preparation. Prayer. He was a servant leader. And how was he prepared? Well, guess what? Moses got educated in the finest education system in the world at that time, and that was where he learned to write and speak. And so he wrote the Pentateuch. Now, what is the Pentateuch? The Pentateuch is the first five books of the Old Testament: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Moses wrote it. How many people do you think 1,000 years ago could write those first five books of the Bible in the style that Moses wrote? To be sure, it was inspired by the Word of God, but there was Moses, prepared in the best educational system known at that time. He was a somebody in Pharaoh's court. And now he's writing and recording all of this. You see, that is part of the preparation for writing the Word of God. And then what about those years when he was a nobody? Way back up there in Midian, he was learning there how to find food and bread and nourishment for his people and for the flocks that he was responsible for. He had preparation for making a living in the land. He was very familiar with that land. God getting him ready to be his leader, to lead these people out of slavery. And see, all of it was in place. All of it was in place. The stage had been set. He was prepared. But Moses did not go into the land of promise. Wow. What a letdown. What a bummer. Well, look what happened. The people got into a situation in the wilderness, and they were thirsty and hungry, and they started to complain. Those that said those Jews were stiff-necked and proud people. We're thirsty. We're hungry. Where's the grapes? Why, Moses, you brought us here to die. And they kept wanting to go back to Egypt. It was better being a slave back in Egypt, Moses, than starving to death with you in this wilderness. Take us back to Egypt, was their cry. How quickly they forget. How quickly we forget. And then God gave Moses specific instructions. And it's interesting that Moses fell on his face in the house of worship and prayed for guidance from God that he would be able to deliver them and go into the promised land. And he was asking God to find favor with him. Here he is in a religious setting. And then right on the heels of that, he goes out and he loses his anger. Think about it. Sometimes we have to admit, be honest with ourselves, I just went to church this morning, had a fabulous time in praise and worship. God spoke to me. I was lifted up by the singing. I was even moved by tears. And then right after church, sometimes getting out of the parking lot, getting onto the crowded freeway, we lose it, and we go ballistics. And then when we come to our senses, we say, what in the world came over me? I was just in the house of God in worship. Now look what I'm doing. Can anyone relate to that? God said to Moses, I want you to go speak to that rock, and people will have water. And out of anger, because Moses was ticked off because of their murmuring and their complaining, out of his anger, he struck the rock with his staff, the same staff that parted the Red Sea. And it was the same staff that he used when he killed this Egyptian who was exploiting a Hebrew. His anger got the best of him. Let me just say this about anger. Anger is a human, valid emotion. We all get angry. We all have the right to get angry. But we don't have the right to hit people, destroy objects, and abuse people when we find ourselves in a fit of rage. Moses didn't learn that. He was ticked. And so he struck the rock. Twice. Bam! Bam! Water came out. You know what Moses did here? He did the right thing in the wrong way, didn't he? How many of us are guilty of doing the right thing, but we do it in the wrong way? I don't know how many times Mary Ann chastised me when I was talking to my children many, many years ago. Dell, what you said was right on, but you said it in the wrong way. All of us are guilty of that at some times. The right thing, the wrong way. So therefore, now he's on Mount Nebo, and God already told him twice before he tells him again, Moses, you can't go into the promised land. I'm prepared. I prayed these 40-40 segments. I'm ready to be a leader here at this time. God said, sorry, you can't go in. And he gives us these reasons. Bottom line was, he was disobedient. He was angry, and he was full of pride. Look what he said here. How long are you going to keep on complaining? Look what we have done. We have provided the water. Look what I have done. Moses was caught up in an arrogant frame of mind at that time. There's one thing that God does not like. In fact, God hates, the writer of Proverbs tells us, and that is a proud look. So, Moses couldn't go in. But the story needs a conclusion, right? Last week we talked about, let me say this. Sometimes when we get angry, we revert to swearing. Sometimes when we are angry, we take the Lord's name in vain. And this is a serious, deadly serious thing when out of a fit of rage and anger, we take the Lord's name in vain. Now here's Moses on the top of the Mount of Transfiguration, 10,000 foot mountain. We talked about that last Sunday. And who was up there with Elijah, Peter, James, and John? Take a close look. Moses. Moses showed up on the Mountain of Transfiguration. Now in the Promised Land. Wow. The punchline here is God doesn't leave any business unfinished. What do we do with the what ifs in life? How do we handle if only in life? How do we address the I just don't understand? What do we do when we say, that just wasn't right? Just not right. We can go through that over and over and over again. There's a lot of things about tomorrow, the songwriter wrote, I don't seem to understand. But there's coming a day when the believer will claim Romans 8, 28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His promise. Whenever God makes a promise in the Scripture, He always precedes that promise with a premise. We do our part, God does His part. There's a promise here, and it's reserved for those who love God, those who are called according to His purposes. All things work together for good. Now, there will come a day in heaven where the different pieces of the puzzle that don't fit here, it'll fit perfectly up there. And God is drawing a beautiful picture of your life here on this earth. And He uses all of the broken pieces, all the shattered dreams, all of our Mount Nebo experiences. He uses them for our good. We may not see it right now, but one day in heaven, we will. The broken pieces will come together. The confusion will be made clear. The times that we have spent on Mount Nebo and life didn't work out the way we thought it would, we will look back and God will say, hey, I was in your life. I was doing a special work in your life. And He would say to all of us, don't miss it. Don't miss it. And the glory of heaven will be wholeness, completeness, and joy that we can't begin to fathom this side of heaven. As I've shared with you before, quite often I go down the list of people who used to sit where you sit, and they're now in heaven, basking in the glory and the presence of the Lord. Someday, soon, if our heart is right with God, we will join that heavenly host, and it will be glory unspeakable and full of glory. So let me ask you a question as we wrap up this message. Are you standing perhaps on the top of your Mount Nebo? Don't give up. Just hang on. Because help is on the way, and God specializes in kind of end time turning things all around for us. I direct your attention to the video screen. Watch and listen.
He knew me then, He knows me now, and He died for me. He loved me then, and He loves me now. Oh, how can it be? Saw my face. He knew the place that I would be today. He knew me there. he died one day, but that was long ago. Well, I'm sure that he was a very good man, but me he did not know. Well, listen, my friend, what I say is true, that he knew me, and he sure knew you. He knew you then, he knows you now, and he loves you. He knew you then, he knows you now, and he died for you. He loved you then, and he loves you now. I know it's true. He saw your face. He knew the place that you would be. And he loves you. He knew us then, he knows us now, and he loves us still.